Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. Borisha Sine here with you for the next half hour. On today's show, foreign workers in Quebec launch a class action suit, saying they are deceived and exploited by their employers.
These workers do not even benefit from the minimal protections available under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program because they only have a visitor visa.
The Alberta government will spend $28 million opening 22,000 new licensed childcare spaces across the province.
This announcement is great news, not only for childcare operators, but for working families who have been struggling to find quality childcare options that work for them, especially if they live in areas where their choices are more limited.
An interfaith gathering in Peterborough, Ontario celebrates its 20th anniversary. Jews, Christians, and Muslims gather at the Abraham Festival.
We all have the same history. We all come through Abraham. We feel that it's important to celebrate this kinship. We're cousins in faith.
Singer-songwriter Freya Milliken nominated for Song of the Year at the Music New Brunswick Awards.
It's my first award nomination ever, so that feels pretty good.
And Diane Ballantyne, a retired teacher from Ontario, is honored with the Prime Minister's Award for Teaching Excellence.
To receive this award just after I retired was like a wonderful bow on top of a very loved career.
These stories and more on Viewpoints.
Local news nationwide.
On Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Thanks for keeping us company. Our first stop this week will be in Montreal, Quebec, where a group of foreign workers allege that they were strung along on the promise of work permits that never came. Now they're going to court with a class action suit. The Immigrant Workers Center, IWC, filed the class action suit, claiming the immigrant worker agency Trésor, Treasure, encouraged workers to come to Canada on visitors' visas and work until their permits were processed. But the IWC office said only a few ever actually received permits. The rest were left in limbo in jobs with wage theft, harassment, and abuse. Now they're seeking damages for violation of Workers' Quebec Charter rights. Most of the workers come from Latin America and were given jobs at New Rest, a catering company that supplies many of the in-flight meals at Pierre-Éliott Trudeau Airport in the province of Quebec. New Rest is also named in the suit for employing workers without permits and subjecting them to poor and even abusive working conditions. Multiple federal departments, as well as Quebec's Commission des Normes de l'Équité de la Santé et de la Sécurité au Travail, will also investigate the companies. The IWC believes that over 400 workers could have fallen victim to the scheme and are urging anyone working on visitor visas for either company to come forward. Details with Jules Bugiel in Montreal, Quebec.
A group of foreign workers are at the center of a new class action lawsuit against an agency they say promised work permits but never delivered. The Immigrant Workers Center filed the suit on Tuesday, claiming the immigrant worker agency Trésor exploited a pandemic measure that allowed visitor visa holders to apply for work permits in Canada. Trésor allegedly encouraged workers to come to Canada on visitor visas and work until their permits were processed. But most of the workers never received permits and say they were left in limbo in jobs rife with wage theft, harassment, and abuse. Now they're seeking damages for violations of their Quebec charter rights.
Soy Carla. Vengo de Chile.
This is Carla, who's named in the lawsuit as Kay, and who, like the other workers at Wednesday's press conference, is not using her full name to protect herself from retaliation or blacklisting. Carla had already come to Canada with her husband and daughter when she encountered Trésor.
En mi inocencia, junto con mi familia, creímos que todo lo que la agencia Trésor, a través de su personal, nos dijo.
She says, in my innocence, along with my family, I believed everything that the Trésor staff told us. We delivered all the documents requested to access the work permits and the quote-unquote legal stability to work. We paid all that Trésor asked us as immigration processing fees, without details of what we were paying for. We were also told that our immigration process had to be carried out exclusively through Trésor. We started working in May 2023 at New Rest, under very precarious and dangerous conditions. We started working because Trésor told us that we had to do so while the permit was being processed. most of the workers were given jobs at New Rest, a catering company that supplies many of the in-flight meals at Pierre Elliott Trudeau Airport. New Rest is also named in the suit for employing workers without permits and subjecting them to poor and even abusive working conditions.
Hola, mi nombre es Aiko, y soy una de tantas personas que vinieron a este país con esperanza de una vida mejor. Me prohibían hablar con mis compañeros y hablar en español.
This is another worker, named in the lawsuit as H. She says, I was forbidden to speak to my coworkers and to speak Spanish. I was not allowed to leave without finishing the job. And even if I worked overtime, I was never paid for it. I ended up with damaged wrists, constantly in pain from the repetitive motion and overwork. Part of the problem is a system of closed work permits that prevents foreign workers from changing jobs once in Canada. Workers were given the impression they would receive permits tying them to New Rest, even though most of these were never received. As a result, they say they felt trapped, their status in Canada reliant on their exploitation. Benoit Scowan from the Immigrant Workers Centre says it's time the closed work permit system ends.
Through this scheme, New Rest and Trésor have created a category of migrant worker who are even more vulnerable than closed work permit holders. These workers do not even benefit from the minimal protections available under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program because they only have a visitor visa. New Rest and Trésor are able to exert a degree of control over workers that goes beyond the already intolerable restriction of freedom that closed work permit holders experience. In light of this scandal, the IWC is renewing our call to abolish the closed work permit system and to regularize the hundreds of thousands of people living in Canada without an official immigration status. It is time to drop this cruel system and give migrant workers the right to freely choose their employers so that they are not vulnerable to companies like New Rest and Trésor.
Yo siento que soy una más de decenas, o quizás cientos de trabajadores.
Carla says she and her husband were fired after she brought her concerns to a supervisor. She says, I feel that I am one more of dozens, or maybe hundreds of workers who've been scammed, deceived, and have had their rights violated, both labor and human rights. They made us believe that it was normal to be treated like slaves. Because of the potential human rights violations, workers have been granted year-long rest and work visas in Canada. The case has triggered an investigation from the feds and from the Provincial Commission des Normes de l'Équité, de la Santé et de la Sécurité au Travail, CNESST.
The CNESST does have the power, well, they license placement and recruitment agencies, and they do have the power to revoke those licenses. And on the side of the ESDC, there are penalties for abuses of the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. In our opinion, they're not particularly substantial given the forms of abuse that we tend to see. It tends to look more like a slap on the wrist.
The Immigrant Workers Centre believes that over 400 people have been harmed and is encouraging workers to join the suit. I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosna in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
In Ontario, the Abraham Festival, an interfaith gathering, is celebrating its 20th anniversary. The festival, held from October 13 to 15, is a gathering of descendants of Abraham, basically Jews, Christians, and Muslims. We all have the same history. We all come through Abraham, says Elizabeth Rahman, co-founder and vice chair of the Abraham Festival. The festivities of the Abraham Festival are open to everyone, not just the people of the Abrahamic faiths, including people from other religions or those with no religious affiliations at all. The festival has been planned for many months now and will undoubtedly take on a different tone because of the current conflict in Israel and Gaza. Even in light of recent events, the festival is still on. However, changes have been made. More on this unusual and delicate initiative with Edward Sweeney in Peterborough, Ontario.
This year, Peterborough's Abraham Festival, an interfaith celebration of the Abrahamic religions, is recognizing its 20th anniversary. This year's Abraham Festival would be taking place on Friday, October 13th and Sunday, October 15th. Trent Radio got the opportunity to speak with Elizabeth Rahman, co-founder and vice chair of the Abraham Festival, about this October's festivities and about the festival's 20-year history in Peterborough.
Well, it's a gathering of the descendants of Abraham, basically Jews, Christians, and Muslims, because we all have the same history. We all come through Abraham. And we feel that it's important to celebrate this kinship. We're cousins in faith.
When Elizabeth says that the Abrahamic religions have the same history, she means that the three faiths, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, each find their spiritual origins through one of Abraham's sons, Ishmael or Isaac. And though these faiths have many similarities, they are also quite different. To celebrate these differences and similarities is one of the reasons why Elizabeth helped create the Abraham Festival back in 2003.
And when we started it, actually, it was just a one-off. I had met by chance a Catholic teacher from St. Peter's High School, whose name was Helen, whose name is Helen. And we found, by talking, we both had this vision for bringing the Abrahamic people together. So, and we thought a celebration would be nice. So it was a one-off thing, and we invited a Jewish friend to join us. But then it was so popular the first year, and everybody said they wanted to, you know, to get to know their spiritual cousins.
Not only are people of the three Abrahamic faiths welcome at this festival, but people of all faith, even of no faith, are welcome as well. And Elizabeth explains why.
As people of faith, we want to put into action our beliefs, and that is to include everybody. Nobody is an outsider. So we greet them with love, with compassion, with hopefully honesty, and without judgment. That's the big thing. And we never use the word tolerance, because we don't tolerate people. We accept, we embrace people.
This year's festival will include a service led by each Abrahamic faith, which everyone is encouraged to attend.
Okay, so on Friday the 13th, we have Jummah prayers at the Oasis, which is at St. James United Church. And the Oasis is a community center based on Islamic fundamentals. So we have Jummah prayers there, and then we will have some tea and goodies after, some Somali tea, which is delicious. In the evening at Beth Israel Synagogue, we have at 6 o'clock, we have Shabbat, so the Jewish prayers. Sunday morning at 10:30 at St. James United, we have the Christian service.
Sunday's service at St. James United Church will be followed by a vegetarian potluck-style lunch. Elizabeth shared that eating together, sharing meals, is an important part of the philosophy behind the Abraham Festival. So they host the vegetarian lunch to try to accommodate as many of the attendants as they can, especially because the three Abrahamic religions may have different dietary choices. After lunch, there will be a celebration, also at St. James United Church, with guest speakers and live musical performances representing the three cultures. I would like to note that there has been a change in the festival's schedule in the week leading up to the events. Elizabeth shared that due to the current situation in the Middle East, the Jewish community at Beth Israel Synagogue wishes to mark Shabbat with their own community. So the Friday 6 p.m. Shabbat service is no longer open to the public, but the remainder of the festival's events will continue as planned. The reasons for holding the Abraham Festival have remained the same since its beginnings in 2003, but Elizabeth feels that the education and relationships that come from this interfaith gathering are more important now than ever.
With what's going on in the country, in North America, in the world, and a lot of the discrimination and hate is based on misunderstanding and fear of the other. So we attempt to demystify the other. And my favorite quote in the Quran, actually, God tells us that he made us of all tribes and nations that we may know one another. So that's the basis of the Abraham Festival, that we may know one another.
This has been Eddie Sweeney reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative here in Peterborough, Nogajiwinan.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
The The Alberta government announced on October 10th that the space creation grant to expand affordable daycare for families will be expanded to include private operators. The expansion will allocate $28 million for 22,500 new licensed childcare spaces across the province. In Edmonton, Alberta, here's Ryan Hunt.
The Alberta government announced on October 10th that childcare affordability will be expanded across the province. Cyril Turton, the Minister of Children and Family Services, spoke in a press conference and gave the rundown of the numbers and the purpose of the investment.
I'm excited to announce that we're taking another step towards a more affordable and accessible childcare. We're directing $28 million to help create up to 22,500 new private childcare spaces over 3 years. We're doing this by expanding our space creation grant to include new and licensed private childcare providers who want to help us achieve our $10 a day affordability target. Parents who are challenged to find accessible and affordable childcare right now will be happy to know that funding will focus on creating new spaces in communities where they are needed the most.
Lots of people are happy about this investment, including Cynthia Nerling, the president of Alberta Association of Childcare Operators. She shared her thoughts on the impact of the announcement.
This announcement is great news not only for childcare operators, but for working families who have been struggling to find quality childcare options that work for them, especially if they live in areas where their choices are more limited. We know that parents depend on us to provide excellent care that helps their kids to grow into their full potential, setting them up for future success in school and in all aspects of their lives. We also know that they are leaning on us to give them peace of mind while they focus on their jobs, their studies, and the many demands that come with raising a family. I'm confident this grant expansion will lead to more choice and stability for kids and their families.
Turton is excited himself about the expansion and shares ways to get involved.
I look forward to seeing the private sector open thousands of new spaces very soon, with many more to follow in the coming years. To those of you who want to take advantage of this grant expansion, PleaseNet Children and Family Services is on hand to help you get through the application process and get those spaces set up. There's a lot of work ahead of us, but we have so much progress to celebrate.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Dorchester-born musician Freya Milliken has been nominated for a Music New Brunswick Award in the Song of the Year category for her song, Wholeheartedly. In Sackville, New Brunswick, Erica Butler called her up to find out how the recognition feels and to get an update on her career.
All these failed infatuations aren't giving me what I need.
Well, I'll start off saying congratulations on your nomination for a Music New Brunswick Award.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about your song, Wholeheartedly. Tell us a bit about, you know, the thought behind that song and how you came up with it.
Sure. So with this song, I wrote it a couple years ago, and at the time I was just thinking about, you know, intimacy and how relationships through society are often sort of portrayed as being quite shallow, and I feel that intimacy isn't always represented in social media, and just like in general, you don't see things in movies represented with much intimacy. So I was trying to think of things such as, like, you know, being loved for your mind instead of your body and your what you look like, and, you know, wanting a real connection as opposed to just something that just touches the surface, I guess.
Okay, yeah. You know, what does it mean to you to be nominated for a Music New Brunswick Award?
I think it's a pretty big step in my career, and I really appreciate the acknowledgement. It's my first award nomination ever, so that feels pretty good. And I'm hoping that even if I don't win, that this nomination will lead to more connections with, you know, within the music industry, and just more exposure, and, you know, getting to play more shows across Atlantic Canada.
Now, you're from Dorchester, is that right, Freya?
Yes.
So, I mean, and I know you attended Acadia. Are you finished with your music degree at Acadia, or are you still working on that?
Yeah, so I graduated in May.
Okay. So what are your plans for this fall?
Well, I've got another song coming out in about a week and a half, and I'm working towards getting my EP ready for release in November, and I've got some shows lined up, a couple in Cape Breton, going to Fredericton in November. And just trying to figure out how to put together a little EP release tour.
Okay. Do you think we're going to see your face in Sackville or Dorchester?
I'm not sure about this time around, but hopefully next spring.
Are you living in the area, or whereabouts are you based now?
I'm based in Wolfville now.
All right. Wolfville won you over.
It did. Yeah. I just fell in love with Nova Scotia and the community here. I've got all my friends here. You know, my band lives in the valley, and there's something just really special about this community here in Wolfville. And I also work for this nonprofit organization called Music and Communities, so I'm pretty tied to that as well.
Okay. All right. Well, best of luck in October. We'll be watching the awards.
Thank you.
That's Freya Milliken, whose song Wholeheartedly has been nominated for Song of the Year in the 2023 Music New Brunswick Awards. Milliken also shared a few shout-outs for her teachers at Dorchester Consolidated School and Tanchamar Regional High. She says Karen Olskamp, Heather Milner, and Tanya Dunlop supported her and gave her a solid foundation in finding and exploring her passion for music.
These failed infatuations aren't giving me what I need. Every time I get close, their feelings reshape, sending a gust of wind through rose clouds in my brain. And I'm left on a bridge between illusion and reality.
Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
The Basin Food and Buyers Expo FABX will be held in Creston, British Columbia on November 3rd and 4th. FABX is an event focused on connecting regional food producers and buyers with the Columbia Basin. 2023 is the first year FABX is being held in Creston. In previous years, it was held in Invermeer, Rosslyn, and Cranbrook, and even Zoom during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Basin Food and Buyers Expo is primarily funded by the Columbian Basin Trust. Local food expert Shauna Fiddler, who also owns a design farm in Slocan, that's a beautiful village nested in the mountains at the south end of the Slocan Lake, and where 272 people live, says food precarity and the difficult situation for farmers is something we all need to keep in mind, saying it's time for a reminder because a lot of local farms are struggling right now. Here's Scott Anishuk.
Since 2018, the Basin Food and Buyers Expo has connected regional food producers and buyers. This year's expo happens November 3rd and 4th in Creston. The organizer of the event, Shauna Fiddler, who also owns Design Farm, a Slocan-based company that creates design solutions for food producers, says it's time for a reminder that a lot of local farms are struggling.
losing farmers quicker than we are gaining new farmers. And I think with the cost of land acquisition and housing prices and inflation, it's pretty tricky to get into farming. I mean, there's some good resources out there like the Young Agrarians that match up unused land with, you know, ambitious young farmers, but it's not growing as much as it needs to fulfill our actual dietary needs. I think it's time for a reminder because a lot of local farms are still struggling right now.
The Basin Food and Buyers Expo aims to cultivate connections that contribute to the success and sustainability of local food producers in the Columbia Basin. Reporting in Nelson, Scott Onischuk.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia. You are listening to Viewpoints.
And great news for a recently retired local teacher and current Wellington County Councillor, Diane Ballantyne. Diane has been presented with a Prime Minister's Award for Teaching Excellence. Ballantyne taught at several schools throughout the Upper Grand District School Board in Ontario during her 28-year career. She says the award came at a delightful time for her and that allowing students to realize their impact on the world in social justice class was a highlight of her career. Looking back, Ballantyne said her job taught her many things, namely patience and flexibility. Journalist Riley Gillespie-Wilson spoke to her.
A retired local high school teacher and Wellington County Councillor was presented with a distinct honor from Canadian Parliament. The teacher spent her 28-year career teaching at various institutions throughout the Upper Grand District School Board. Diane Ballantyne, the Ward 6 counselor who finished her career at Centre Wellington District High School, says the Prime Minister's Award for Teaching Excellence was well-timed.
It was an incredible honour to be able to receive this award. Teaching really is a calling and one that I have loved. It has challenges, but it also has really incredible rewards. To receive this award just after I retired was like a wonderful bow on top of a very loved career.
Some of her favorite moments along the way came when she was able to travel internationally with her students. Ballantyne said she loved the feeling of getting to show these students a part of the world they'd never seen before, highlighting trips to Turkey and Egypt. Within the classroom, Ballantyne accredited her success to connection with her students.
I think one of the things that you learn from the students is that building the rapport or the relationship with them is the most important part of teaching. Not the curriculum, not the technology, but actually developing a one-to-one interaction with them.
Ballantyne also touched on her work in social justice classes and how rewarding it was to see students realize they can make a difference in the world. Looking back, Ballantyne said she learned to maintain a sense of humor in a job that taught about patience and flexibility. Quoted in a Wellington County news release saying it's been the honor of my life to be a teacher, Ballantyne retired in June. I'm Riley Gillespie-Wilson.
So this concludes this edition of Viewpoints. Thanks to our journalists Jules Bougiel, Riley Gillespie-Wilson, Ryan Hunt, Edward Sweeney, Erica Butler, and Scott Onischuk. Our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Thanks for being here. Stay tuned to what follows. Take care. Ciao.
Canada-info.ca.